personas. Sabemos que hay detenciones y hay detenidos actualmente africanos en cárceles, en prisiones sionistas, que realmente van haciendo compañía a nuestros hermanos palestinos en esta política de agresión racista que tiene el Estado de Israel.
Samir es uno de los manifestantes africanos. Él es migrante que llegó a refugiarse hace 4 años a Israel desde Darfur, en Sudán.
Yo solicito el asilo a Israel porque tengo problemas en mi país. Es un régimen dictatorial. Queremos que el gobierno israelí nos reconozca como refugiados. Estamos aquí porque hemos huido de las persecuciones en nuestro país, no por razones económicas. No estamos aquí para ganar dinero.
La mayoría de africanos que llegan a Israel son de Sudán y Eritrea y llegan huyendo de los conflictos armados de la región. Pero en Israel, con la aplicación de la nueva ley, son detenidos y privados de libertad sin juicio. Una situación similar a la que aplican gobiernos europeos como el español, con las detenciones en centros de internamiento para extranjeros.
El presidente de Venezuela se reunió el miércoles con alcaldes y gobernadores para lanzar un plan nacional de seguridad. La reunión ocurrió después del asesinato de Mónica Spears, ex reina de belleza y actriz venezolana, y su esposo. La tragedia ha movilizado a la derecha venezolana, que ha redoblado sus ataques contra el gobierno de Nicolás Maduro.
Cultores y artistas de Venezuela expresaron su pesar por el asesinato de la ex reina de belleza.
Expresando contigo que queremos paz.
Una manifestación de protesta y reclamo por mayor seguridad para su país.
Hierro mata, hierro tiene que morir, pena de muerte.
Estos representantes de un sector de la cultura venezolana fueron hasta el Parlamento de la Nación Suramericana a expresar sus reclamos. Una diputada opositora les dio la bienvenida. Una pancarta con llamado a la rebelión encabezó la protesta.
Nos corresponde a nosotros, ciudadanos de nuestra generación, sacar adelante y salvar a Venezuela, que significa cambiar el régimen.
¿Y cómo cambiarán el régimen? Por las urnas no han podido. Por favor.
Pero los cultores y artistas pudieron dialogar con una comisión presidida por el primer vicepresidente del Parlamento venezolano. Aquí acordaron ser parte de un mecanismo de acompañamiento permanente de la Asamblea Nacional a los esfuerzos que el presidente de Venezuela impulsaba en ese mismo instante junto a gobernadores y alcaldes de 79 municipios del país. El jefe de Estado llamó a no manipular el tema con fines políticos.
Es una falta de respeto a todo el país, a las víctimas, regodearse en el dolor, creyendo que del dolor, bueno, generarán quién sabe qué. No, no van a destruir la revolución bolivariana a partir de la manipulación, mal utilización política de un problema de carácter estructural que cruza todo un continente.
Para el gobierno de Venezuela, ante los hechos de violencia que conmocionan al país, nadie puede cruzar los brazos. Por ello, la invitación a alcaldes y gobernadores de todas las toldas políticas a aportar en la construcción de un nuevo modelo de seguridad frente a la violencia y la criminalidad.
Por eso es que ese debate entre guerra al AMPA o... Nosotros tenemos que combinar una política integral de todo el Estado venezolano, de toda la sociedad venezolana, que nos permita verdaderamente combinar factores y garantizar la ocupación del territorio y la protección de la sociedad en su conjunto.
El presidente Nicolás Maduro reiteró su propuesta de crear un plan de pacificación nacional durante el 2014 para construir paz a partir del desarme y la prevención integral del delito. También invitó al gremio de artistas que marcharon hasta la Asamblea Nacional a unirse a estos esfuerzos y trabajar juntos para superar los antivalores de la muerte. Rolando Segura, Telesur, Caracas, Venezuela.
El expresidente de El Salvador, Francisco Flores, del partido de derecha Arena, reconoció que durante su gobierno recibió personalmente altas sumas de dinero de Taiwán sin reportarlo a las autoridades. La noticia se conoció a menos de un mes de las elecciones presidenciales en El Salvador. Wilfredo Hernández con los detalles.
Sin documentación que respaldara su postura, el expresidente de la República, Francisco Flores, llegó a la Asamblea Legislativa para comparecer ante la comisión especial creada para estudiar el donativo de 10 millones de dólares enviados por la República de Taiwán a El Salvador durante su administración y que, según reveló recientemente el presidente Mauricio Funes, nunca entraron a las arcas del Estado.
¿Qué hice yo con esos fondos? Yo con esos fondos los ocupé en la crisis de los terremotos, los ocupé para defender al país del crimen organizado, particularmente del narcotráfico, los utilicé durante la crisis de los secuestros y los utilicé para investigar la vinculación de las maras con organizaciones delincuenciales.
Según Flores, las donaciones no se hicieron una o dos veces, sino que se recibió fondos del gobierno taiwanés en reiteradas ocasiones. Sin embargo, afirma que éstas no entraron como fondos para el Estado, sino en carácter personal, por lo que los cheques llegaban a su nombre.
Estos fondos no eran fondos ni para el gobierno, no eran fondos de los impuestos, no eran fondos adentro de un convenio de cooperación. Eran fondos entregados por un mandatario a otro para un propósito específico.
A pesar de esto, sostuvo no conocer el monto total de los donativos al no existir un funcionario o entidad de gobierno encargado de auditar el uso de los fondos. Sin embargo, el ex secretario privado de Flores, Aldo Vinicio Parducci, dijo a la Comisión Especial del Parlamento que sí existe un registro de por lo menos dos de las donaciones, pero del resto de fondos, por lo que se investiga a Flores, no se tiene conocimiento.
La única que yo recuerdo en ese periodo es efectivamente la del 2001, cuando fueron los terremotos y hay un convenio de donación que se dio, creo que fue en febrero, que eran 2 algo millones de dólares.
Luego de estas transacciones hechas durante la administración Flores, curiosamente, en el año 2005, a la sección de probidad de la Corte Suprema de Justicia se le recortaron facultades, entre estas, el poder investigar el patrimonio de los exfuncionarios de gobierno.
Cientos de activistas se congregaron esta semana en Sacramento, la capital de California, para ratificar que continuarán en el 2014 su lucha porque se indiquen las etiquetas de los productos, los alimentos genéticamente modificados. El evento, convocado por la organización California State Grange y el grupo Label GMOs, reunió a decenas de organizaciones ecologistas y coincidió con el comienzo de sesiones de las dos cámaras del Congreso Estatal. Lolita Macías y Richard Macías estuvieron en Sacramento y prepararon el siguiente material.
Hola, me encuentro en Sacramento, la capital del estado de California, con manifestantes de diferentes organizaciones. Evento que se llevó a cabo para protestar en contra de Monsanto y su comida genéticamente modificada con sustancias químicas que le hacen daño a los seres humanos. Por lo cual, están pidiendo que se etiqueten todo lo que contenga GMOs, por sus siglas en inglés.
Soy Miguel Robles, soy el fundador y coordinador de la Alianza de Bioseguridad, Biosafety Alliance. Estamos tratando de que algún legislador de aquí, Sacramento, introduzca un bill para ponerle etiqueta a todos los alimentos que contienen organismos genéticamente modificados.
No vimos ninguna gente después de usted latino. ¿Qué opina de eso?
Lo que pasa es que el movimiento lo han tomado los blancos. Nosotros, con nuestros propios recursos, tuvimos un programa de radio en una estación comercial en San Francisco, donde estuvimos hablando por meses sobre sostenibilidad, sobre medio ambiente, alimentación, y también tuvimos un programa de radio las últimas semanas en Los Ángeles, en La Grande. Hicimos mucha educación con latinos. Y al final, cuando nos dimos cuenta de los resultados de la Proposición 37, todo el dinero que se invirtió, millones de dólares, fue para los blancos, tuvieron un 42% de apoyo. Los negros tuvieron el 52% y los latinos tuvimos un 71% de apoyo. Nosotros ganamos, nosotros no perdimos. Por eso cada vez que vengo a estos lugares y nos dicen que perdimos en la Proposición 37, yo les digo que perdieron ellos, perdieron los blancos. Nosotros los latinos nos ganamos, pero nos costó mucho trabajo educando a nuestra comunidad. Para nosotros esta cuestión de los transgénicos es una cuestión muy, muy delicada, porque la base de nuestra alimentación es el maíz. Y siempre que escuchamos sobre algo transgénico, pensamos en el maíz transgénico. ¿Sí? Entonces, el 100% del maíz transgénico que se siembra en Estados Unidos, el 50% es para alimentar animales, el 20% es para corn syrup, para endulzante, y el 30% es para etanol. Entonces, pero siempre estamos pensando que tal vez las tortillas que estamos comiendo están contaminadas con maíz transgénico. Ese es lo delicado que es para nosotros. Tal vez no nos importa tanto que los demás productos contengan transgénicos, pero realmente nosotros tenemos en la mesa algo por qué preocuparnos todos los días, en la mañana, en la tarde, en la noche, es la tortilla. La otra cosa es que mucha de la gente que somos latinos en California, el 30% de los californianos hablan español, o somos de origen latino también, y esta gente tiene familia en México, muy mucha gente, ¿no? Hay muchos mexicanos también. Y ahora vemos que en México acaba de poner la moratoria también a todos los cultivos piloto, experimentales o comerciales de maíz. Y lo que va a pasar ahora es de que con esta moratoria que impuso un juez federal, es de que estamos sentando un precedente para que también se den en otros lugares. Vemos lo que pasó en Uruguay, que también acaban de ponerle la etiqueta a los transgénicos. Y también en Perú, los transgénicos también están prohibidos. En Bolivia también. Entonces aquí en California sabemos tantos latinos que también tenemos el mismo interés y que hemos sido muy afectados por estas compañías, no solamente por ahora los últimos 15 años, sino también por todo lo que hemos visto que estaba pasando los últimos 20 años en México con los alimentos chatarra desde el 94. La obesidad, el colesterol, los problemas de corazón, la diabetes se ha aumentado de una manera exponencial. Y aquí lo vemos con nuestras comunidades en California también.
Reportando desde el Capitolio en Sacramento, Lolita Macías.
La compañía estadounidense Monsanto es la principal productora de comida genéticamente modificada en el mundo. La misma corporación que tiene una larga trayectoria de cooperación con las Fuerzas Armadas de Estados Unidos, vendiéndoles armas químicas como el agente naranja, usado masivamente contra el pueblo vietnamita. Activistas que repudian el producto de la poderosa empresa también planean otra protesta frente al edificio de la Administración de Alimentos y Drogas, la FDA, los días 10 y 11 de enero en College Park, estado de Maryland. Hemos llegado al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica. A nombre del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez.
And be sure to tune in to Bathrop's Piers Broadsides. That's with me, Robert North, on 101.1 FM and www.freakradio.org every Thursday night, 6 to 8 p.m. And, of course, every Sunday morning from 9:30 all the way to 1 p.m. If you're game.
Oh. And coming up next on Free Radio, the radio station, not just the stream, it's Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. That's a show that I do for the next 2 hours. My name is Robert Norse. I invite you to stay with me and call in if you'd like, 831-427-3772, 831-427-3772. Going to be reviewing the state of rights for common folks on the streets and the situation downtown, plus a few extras, a few flashbacks, and who knows, maybe a few of your calls. So stay tuned and, well, give us a ring.
The hallway, a problem for only one reason. The president raises the question, who wants a... The homeless are a problem for only one reason. Our president raises a question, who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Could it be 90 million dead in the yard? Who owns the land? Could it be 6 million?
Tell me, 427-3772. As mentioned before, I'll be with you for 2 hours, actually on the air. All right, well done, Free Radio Santa Cruz workers And well done those who have helped protect the station in times of accident and trouble. So, I'm going to begin the show by playing a Huff meeting, or part of a Huff meeting. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, a group that normally meets every Wednesday. In fact, almost regularly, like clockwork, though last Wednesday, yesterday, we didn't meet except that some of us showed up at the Cafe Huff, run by a beggarbacker, Becky Johnson. Thank you, Becky, for doling out the coffee. There were some, I understand, 600 people who came to that Food Not Bombs Sunday meal in front of the post office. Didn't have a meeting, but we did put out a little literature and hung out, and I did my usual recording a few audio interviews with people. I guess that's par for the course. We'll be meeting again next week, probably that'll be New Year's Day. Wow, I guess we're hitting the holidays this year. Or maybe we won't, but if you want to find out, you can check the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org, or probably even a better bet is to call the Huff phone line, 423-HUFF, 831-423-HUFF, or get on the Huff email list, which you can get on by going to the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org, and we'll send you scintillating emails, usually somewhere between 3 or 4 and 5 or 10 a week. And you'll get to not only catch some of the latest homeless capers or capers against the homeless around the country and around the city, but you also get to see my analysis, notes by Norse, I call them. I kind of scribble down a few things and give my kind of try to relate what I use the story often as a kicking off point for describing my latest gripes, concerns, grievances, and impressions on local political situations regarding homeless folks. So, without further ado, let's go back to this October Huff meeting, which we normally hold in the Sub Rosa Cafe at 703 Pacific. Again, you're welcome to come. It's open to the public, 11 o'clock on Wednesday mornings. And this one, we had a visit from Councilmember Micah Posner. Micah actually kind of is often in the area because he used to be more, but he was a key part of People Power, a bicycle empowerment group that he worked with for I don't know how many years, and its offices are right next door to the Sub Rosa, also the bike church where folks can learn how to repair bikes, maybe even, I think, purchase cheap bikes. If the police department ever lets go of the bikes they bike-napped 2 years ago and continue to hold hostage. Actually, they don't hold them hostage. I understand they take them to Sacramento and dump them in an auction and then claim whatever money they can from that. Or maybe they give it away. I don't know what they do with it, but it certainly violates the principles that were previously being followed of bikes going to non-profit charities, a number of them, and distributed by the bike church. That's been derailed by the police department under Chief Kevin Vogel, who may not have had a direct hand in it, but is certainly ultimately responsible for it. And then the stall and stalemating and stonewalling has been going on as bike church people like Steve Schnarr try to find out what's going on by city council hacks, I would say, like Tina Scholl, assistant city manager. And, of course, ultimately the responsibility is with the most powerful man in the city, Martine Bernal, our city manager. And, of course, the mayor has some culpability. It's been Hillary Bryant. Before that, it was Don Lane. And now it's Lynn, I don't know, I was calling her Rattlesnake Robinson. I decided maybe call her Round-Em-Up Robinson based upon the kind of order she seems to be giving the police department. I haven't got confidential access to her memos, but the crackdown on street vendors is proceeding apace. Several vendors have told me they've been told by CSO Barnett, a community service officer, a new rule, apparently based on what he claims is an old law, that will only allow vendors to vend for 5 days in a period of 6 months unless they have both a permit and a business license, both of which are really unavailable. at least from the city, they're unavailable, or have been for years on Pacific Avenue. So it's simply sort of a transparent, deceptive, and rather nasty tactic, it seems to me, to drive away the vendors he doesn't like. And that's included two people we heard from in the last show or two, David and Crystal, as well as scarf seller Kate, who has been out there making nice-looking scarves. And these are poor people who are actually trying to provide for themselves and also provide, you know, you might say, a service to the community. Their, I don't know if you want to call it art, but certainly their craft out there is being summarily dismissed, and they are being told to get out, in essence. And that is something I'll be following, hopefully, and that you'll be following if you're out there keeping your eyes on Pacific Avenue in the days ahead. Another issue, and the one that's coming up at this particular Huff meeting, was the issue that there are a number of issues of Micah Posner. I was trying to get him to answer questions about other matters regarding city council procedures that impacts those of us who waste our time coming to city council on basic issues of fairness for the homeless, shelter, survival, police abuse, things of that sort. And Posner has been, at the time in October, he was not answering those questions with any kind of directness or speed. Anyway, I'm going to play some of this meeting. The point of this is not merely to critique Posner, who is probably the most liberal of all the city council members, but unfortunately one of the most timid of all the city council members. Of course, he's one of the newest council members. I think he actually, if not the newest council member, well, I guess Robinson came in at the same time as he did. But Robinson's been pretty quiet, too, except for the occasional toxic outburst, I would call it. Anyway, let's hear from some of this meeting and maybe your thoughts. I'll certainly be giving you some of mine. And we'll also hear a little music from the Big Three featuring Mama Cass a little later in the show.
Recording now. We have Micah Posner, city council member, here, and it's about 10 to 1 at the Huff meeting on October 30th. And we have Chuck and Becky and David and Mario are also here. So, I guess I should look up the email, because that's what we're talking about. I don't have it here. Well, you probably want your copy, too. So. I'd hope to get copies out for everybody, but I think last meeting I had them, I sent them around you.
This is an email that contained the questions I had for Micah. Eventually, this kind of dissolves into a discussion of the bathroom that Posner has championed, actually only a glorified porta-potty worth costing $15,000, surrounded by a fence, guarded on the levee that seemed, well, you'll hear some of the discussion of this. I'll let that discussion speak for itself.
Email list. So
what's the first comment you would make?
Well, do you want me to go through these questions at Robertson?
Yeah.
Okay. So the first one is, did you even attempt in your discussions with staff and other council members to suggest that the park and or parking garage bathrooms be kept open at night? This is sort of like a different approach rather than, because you know that we're pursuing doing a sort of deluxe porta potty that will be open 24 hours. Let me give a quick report about that first. The reason it was supposed to be open already, the reason it got delayed, because the staff came to the obvious conclusion that there should be a needle disposal receptacle in it.
And this, of course, is an interesting point that Micah is making about how staff is going to subvert even an elementary, the only 24-hour bathroom in the downtown area for anybody, actually, but certainly for homeless people, by talking about allowing the staff to trip up on the idea of there not being a Sharps container, or should there be a Sharps container, or whatever. However, I have a caller who's calling in. Hey there, caller, just who the heck are you?
Hi, Robert. It's Chuck from Palo Alto.
Hi, Chuck.
Yeah. I noticed you. We're listening to the show here at Becky's house, and I heard you mention Becky and David and me, but I didn't hear exactly what you said.
I was denouncing you as war criminals in the homeless movement. Actually, I mentioned that Becky was responsible for the Cafe Huff yesterday at the Food Not Bombs meal, and I think that was what I said. Yes.
But you were associating David and me as co-conspirators in committing compassion to homeless people. Is that right?
You know, I don't know if I mentioned you, Chuck, but I certainly didn't want to leave you out. I mean, you were lurking around on the periphery for sure.
Well, I was. I was lurking in a lot of places on the periphery there.
Uh-huh.
Robert, the main thank you. Thank you for that. And by the way, I did hear a bit of what you were saying about, Sharps containers and bathrooms. And I'm inferring a little bit, I think, from what you were saying, so please correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think you're saying that everybody needs bathrooms, not just homeless people, and when you impose these attempts to be mean to homeless people, you are hurting everybody, the whole community. Is that what you're... Do you agree with that?
Well, I certainly agree with that. I don't know if that's exactly what I was saying, but I certainly would agree with that. No question. Sure.
Okay. And now for a bit of controversy, I think that Micah Posner is a wonderful bright light in a very dark city council and should be, praised for what he does. Just because somebody happens to have some authority and responsibility doesn't make him necessarily a war criminal. And Micah is a bright light in a dark, dark city council.
Well, I think I was characterizing you and your companions as the war criminals.
Okay.
But I have to say that that was not really a serious statement. You actually are on the other side of the war, so peaceful though you may be, I think you are still, one might say in a metaphorical sense, a soldier or a fighter, a struggler, if you will, for basic human rights for folks outside.
Well, thank you. I wasn't sure where you were going there, and I was afraid you were going to criticize me of being a fellow traveler of the fat, rich, and greedy.
Well, I definitely have differences of opinion with you, Chuck, around, the emphasis on, we talked about the Sunnyvale Armory, which, I'm glad that someone's struggling to keep it open, but, and I'm glad people are working on, vehicle. I was working on, vehicle habitation. And it's nice to talk about Micah Posner. You'll have to tell me what his wonderful credentials are that lead you to believe he's such a great guy. I judge him on the basis of what he responds to in terms of reasonable requests from the public and standing up for basic principles of civil rights for homeless people, regardless of the opinions of Hillary Bryant or Don Lane or anybody else on that rather twisted council. And I know that as the politicians, have all kinds of different priorities. But unfortunately, I think that as citizens, we need to demand that they take honest, responsible, direct, transparent, and accountable positions. And he's just not doing that. Of course, he's doing it, shall we say, somewhat more than some of the other council members. You might say, he's a little better than the other council members. But, in terms of basic issues, I don't know. But tell me, give me some hope.
I think he does deserve credit, more than just a little credit. And just...
For what?
I think you are being overly demanding and expectatious of him, if expectatious is a word.
Okay.
Just because you ask him to do this or do that and he doesn't do it doesn't make him a bad guy. Everybody's got a right to refuse a request for whatever reason.
No, politicians have a responsibility to the public when, for example, information is requested of a public nature that they provided, particularly if they claim to be either champions of or supporters of a particular group, and they refuse to do that because of their apprehension of offending other council members. Some people might say, well, this is said about Steve Plaich as well. He needs to protect his political capital by not offending, and then later on, when he's, worked his way into the structure, he can, get some good things done. I mean, after all, he's only one vote and all that sort of thing, which is certainly, one can take this perspective. But again, I ask you, what specific things has he done that have impressed you that lead you to defend him?
Well, to tell you the truth, and the first thing was that you admired him. You introduced me to him, and you talked about him in somewhat positive manner, I forget. This is when we were in front of Forever 21 or whatever it was, and a demonstration there when you invited me to come and speak for the first time here. You painted him in very positive light, and so did Becky.
Well, then that was a lying son of a bitch. You should have slapped me across the chops, man.
Well, again, this is part of your charm, your mercurial, shall we say, not tied down to one consistent point of view. No, but we all admit, he is far more sympathetic to the needs of homeless people, of human beings, than other members of the city council.
Not as a politician. As a human being, possibly so. Although, hard to say, Hillary Bryan may be very charitable. I mean, even somebody like Lynn Robinson or Pamela Comstock may be very sympathetic on an individual basis to individual people. The real question, though, is how do they perform politically? That's the issue.
Well, I agree. Especially if they have power, and every individual has some amount of power, what do you do with it, you know, with your time, with your house, with your vote? So, yes, I agree with that. But
you need to look back into my... Yeah, probably it's recorded, and you may even find it online on one of my earlier shows, because I tended to record a lot of that stuff, you know, and play it later. What I said that was positive about Micah Posner, I mean, he's a friend of mine, you know, in terms of, you know, I know him, and we've known each other for a long time, and, he's part of the liberal, quote-unquote, community that's around there. But he's also, when he takes on the responsibility of becoming a city council member, he also takes on the burden. And I guess the most, you know, if you find specific things, I can find specific things to praise about some of his actions. But the real question is, when you weigh it in the balance, what do you find? And that's the issue. And to me, it's more important to bring up those deficiencies than it is to praise the little positive steps that are taken, because, you know, people are still losing their property in massive amounts. They're still out the outside having their tents destroyed, their sleeping bags confiscated, their ID taken, their medicine taken. They're still being jailed for victimless crimes. And you don't hear much about this from Big Micah. He's into other things like traveling in Greece or wherever the hell he is with his family, you know, which I suppose, you know, on Christmas vacation and all that stuff. And I guess you can't expect, you know, the city council members to be activists. But he does come from what he claims to be an activist background. So it's always the case with politicians that they're disappointing in this way. But I don't think it's wrong to acerbically criticize them, provided you do so accurately and also give them credit for what they do that is positive.
Well, okay, I've got three things to say. First of all, philosophically, I don't believe you or I or anybody can know why somebody did something. Now, yes, you can watch how Micah votes or when anybody's vote, yeah. But the reason they voted that way, well, what we tend to do is, if we like the person, or we like their vote, we come up with very positive explanations for what we think they were thinking. We can never know. They don't even know everything that they were thinking. So that's one thing. That's just very philosophical. In other words, you can't... Mike is afraid of offending. You don't know why he did this.
Well,
right.
Remember, Chuck, this phone call is coming in the beginning of an interview where Micah is quite candid about why he's doing what he's doing. So, you know, you may actually change your mind, or perhaps not, when you hear the rest of this, if we ever get to it. You know.
I guarantee I'm not going to change my mind. I've made up nobody even knows his own thoughts. I mean, in other words, if I ask you, Robert, why do you think XYZ, you could give me an answer, and you might, you know, be quite thoughtful about it and believe it.
It's getting a little airy-fairy here, Chuck. Forgive me, but go ahead. What are your second and third concerns?
Are you making fun of my silliness? So the problem is, when tomorrow it may happen to come up in your mind about this conversation, you go, you know, when I was telling Chuck what I thought, I really did leave out blah, blah, blah. I forgot, you know. So in other words, nobody really knows totally what they think. You know, they can give you their best estimate, but that's it. Okay? So that's number one. Let me just go through these quickly. The second thing is another philosophical disagreement. I do believe strongly that if anybody makes any small sign of progress in the direction you define as progress. Give them a pat on the back. Recognize it. Most of us get damn little praise, and politicians included, and maybe deservedly so. So when they do something you like, for God's sake, anybody, you know, a homeless person, a priest, you, anybody.
Number three.
Thank you. Very good, Robert. Number three, you may agree or disagree with this. The fact is, I'm sure you'll agree with the fact, the police didn't show up yesterday at the post office. You agree?
They haven't shown up at the post office for months. That's correct.
Okay. But there were 600 people there yesterday, and they were hit.
It would have been even more embarrassing for them to show up yesterday, particularly with Keith McHenry there, who would be prepared to go to jail, and a few rest of us. So, no, well, I mean, if you're suggesting that some, if you're going to link that with anything Micah did, I'd be curious. You have some indication that Micah was the key person?
You're accusing me. You can accuse me plenty, but let me finish.
I don't know. I was just wondering what.
Stupid statement first before you jump on it. All I'm saying is my assumption is that the police deserve at least a little bit of credit.
Yes, please.
Maybe for just smart PR, as you're saying. But I'm willing to take that as a gift, as an act of kindness, of leaving alone a good thing without going and ruining it, which they have done many times in the past, but didn't do yesterday. And I think we can talk about that and them in a positive light for showing restraint and, yes, being mindful of their image.
Okay, well, let me deal with these, but I'm gonna kind of end the call because I want to kind of move on. But I see you've made your thoughts out there, Chuck. I mean, and we'll talk some more. Feel free to call in again if you feel you haven't been adequately answered. But I'm gonna try to roll because I tend to get lost in these conversations, and I don't want to get too lost. But I'll answer that off the air and get back to me if you want.
Okay, thank you, Robert.
Thank
Take
you,
care.
Chuck. You know, I've also got stories about what the police did elsewhere when there wasn't a large crowd of people and media watching them. There was media watching yesterday. Alex DeRosi did a great story about Food Not Bombs in the Santa Cruz Indy Media section. There was a video of Keith McHenry's speech. In fact, I was going to play it. I may still do that. And Keith is supposed to be calling into this show. I'm hoping he will to give a sort of a brief summing up of how his last 10 days in Santa Cruz have been, or week. I'm not sure however long he's been here. Keith McHenry is the co-founder of Food Not Bombs and really the instigator of the Christmas meal. A number of people are also involved. Abby, perhaps Steve Plaich, I don't know how much involved. He usually walks around, takes a lot of credit for stuff, and often does a lot of work for stuff, too. So it's kind of hard to tell with Steve. So I don't know. But I do know that the police will pause before attacking a large group of people in that way. And that isn't something that I think is you want to give them credit for. In fact, in a way, you might want to blame them, because if they did that, they'd be exposing for the public to see what they do to small groups of people or individuals alone. The predators like to attack the weak and vulnerable. Large groups of people are not so weak and vulnerable. Although they do, you know, they can suffer that kind of discrimination too, and perhaps will, under the new public assembly law, if the practice becomes, for example, to go after the DIY parade, which will be coming up on New Year's Eve, the do-it-yourself parade without a permit. I suspect the police will be sensible enough, and Mayor Roundem Up Robinson will also be sensible enough to back off from that. But we'll have to see. You know, it depends. It's not clear. The second point that was made, give somebody a pat on the back when they do something positive. Certainly as an individual, I think that's a great and important thing to do. You encourage someone, a positive reinforcement, you know, if you want them to keep doing it. If you're being manipulative, or if you're being sincere and you feel that way, that's good too. You know, hey, thank you very much. I feel good about what you did. My problem is that when I see Posner at City Council, generally speaking, I don't feel good about his general attitude and what he does. There are some exceptions, and I've given him credit for that. Admittedly, sort of reluctantly, and as a sort of an afterthought almost, or a postscript to a broader critique. And that may not make him more amenable to my criticism. I don't really care. I'm not concerned with molding a politician. That's not my objective. My objective is to speak the truth as I see it. And other people will, you know, call him up and congratulate him and thank him and or criticize him, as the case may be. And, you know, that's what they should do. What we need to do, I think, is to look, continue to keep going back to the issues and raising the issues so that they can be made clear to the community. The politicians, obviously, are not addressing the issues. They're piping hysterical, phony issues that are hurting homeless people. And others are simply pursuing kind of pandering to the right issues, which are saying, oh, see, we're concerned with public safety, but we don't think you should be shooting every homeless person. Sending out social workers to let the police know that that they're coming to raid their camps and they should go away. That's the Don Lane proposal that I thought I saw on Civonomics, the Civonomics website that we talked about, I and Robert Singleton. And I got to admit, I have not closely investigated it, so if I'm wrong, kick my ass around, and as you should. Let me take a brief musical break, and then I'm going to continue playing the audio from late October of Micah Posner, a council member, speaking to us Huffsters as we attempt to get. I was just trying to get straight answers from him on why he didn't simply ask that the bathrooms be opened during the bathrooms that already exist in San Lorenzo Park and the parking garages be opened at night instead of spending $15,000 to set up a porta potty. It's obviously a much better idea, I would think, to open them at night unless he has other information. But he said, oh, well, the staff didn't like that. They didn't want to do that. So I'm just doing what the staff wants to do. Well, that's not a good answer. Because he's more likely to get the staff to do the better thing by pressing for the stronger alternative. Because then the staff will, you know, come up with the weaker alternative as a sort of a compromise. But if you surrender all the territory to begin with, I don't think you get very far. Admittedly, you know, it depends on the situation, the exact situation. So, let's take a musical breather from this passionate dialogue or a monologue, as the case may be. Phone and numbers, in case you want to join it, is 427-3772, 427-FRSC. And we are live, so don't you forget that. You can talk to the community. Number Grandfather's Clock, the Big Three featuring Mama Cass, an ancient group that predates the Mamas and the Papas, but has a sort of similar sound, though not as transcendent and melancholy, perhaps. I don't know. Turn to Free Radio, and it's 101.3 FM on your dial, or maybe you're streaming, checking us out at freakradio.org. We need a transmitter site. Don't forget, the one we've got is very, very, very temporary. And, of course, our studio presence depends on people paying their dues, which they're not. So hopefully that they start anteing up. Maybe Uncle Dennis will have a report on that when he comes on at 8 o'clock with his show From the Cream to the Dregs. I don't know. Let's hear from Micah October at the Huff meeting. And just one final point that the last caller, in response to some of his concerns, I want you to notice there was nothing specific that Chuck had to say about Micah's actual achievements. And, you know, just general comments about, I don't know, how to deal with human beings and, you know, showing respect for people in politics or having some kind of positive impact on occasion or anyway. And so, to me, we got to keep looking at the specifics, and I would encourage everyone to do that. And let's hear Micah talk about or evade some of the specifics. Having a little technical problem here, but I'm hoping it won't last long. But it does seem to be a problem, and I don't know what it is. So let me wrestle with it a little bit. While I'm wrestling, you get to hear a little bit more of the Big Three. So here we go.
Mommy, Mom.
And we're back on track. Here we go with Micah Posner, October at the Huff meeting.
Approach rather than, because you know that we're pursuing doing a sort of deluxe porta potty that will be open 24 hours. Let me give a quick report about that first. The reason it was supposed to be open already, the reason it got delayed, is because the staff came to the obvious conclusion that there should be a needle disposal receptacle in it.
There should be a what?
A needle disposal place in it.
Sharps container.
Sharps container, but then they got all confused because they didn't know how to pull that off. And but some good things came out of it because they realized that they, you know, I don't want the tape. I don't usually get taped when I go to citizens' meetings where we're trying to figure stuff out together. And now I'm realizing as I'm talking for good reason, because I'm thinking of us as allies all together.
Why don't you do
it's
that?
A very different role between
Micah,
you as a member
Micah,
of the press
why don't
and
you,
us figuring
Micah,
stuff out together.
Why don't you simply give a brief answer in terms of a question,
okay,
and then if you want to, you know, elaborate on it, I can turn it off. You can elaborate on it.
Okay, so the brief answer is the staff and the council have found sort of a consensual spot about trying this porta potty as a first step. I think if the porta potty works out, if it doesn't get trashed too quickly, there'll be more openness to open the other bathrooms at night. Wasn't necessarily my favorite approach, but, you know, as someone who's pragmatic, if I get some, you know, if I find a place where we have agreement on something which I want, I mean, the porta potty sounds great to me. So there was kind of consensus around that, whereas some of the other proposals, like to open Seven Hundred Park, which I also favored, or some of the other bathrooms,
mm-hmm,
there wasn't consensus. Part of it is simply that the porta potty is cheaper, you know, so if it gets trashed, the staff are less worried about it. They don't own it. They don't.
So let me understand what the answer to the question is, because, again, I'm trying to limit this specifically so we can, you know, then if you want to talk about more elaborate matters, I can turn off the tape recorder. Did you attempt to suggest that these bathrooms be kept open?
Yes,
part of your discussion was
I did, and I think the approach of the city right now is to try out the porta potty bathroom first, and if that goes reasonably well, to consider opening other bathrooms.
What was their immediate response to that? That was, in other words, did they reject it? Did they say we're going to consider it? Did they ever give any written documents where there was a, we've researched it because of this, this, and this, or did they just suddenly say, no, we're going to do the...
Well, they said we're interested in that, and we'd prefer this approach, which is to start with the porta potty, which they don't have to clean. You know, they'll have a company clean it, and it's not as valuable in the other bathrooms, and if, you know, and then they'll consider opening more bathrooms.
And what, but they didn't specifically consider whether they having an all-night attendant in one of the existing bathrooms. Did you ask for that? Was that asked for and answered or not?
No.
Okay, well, that was a question I had.
I want to interject.
Part of the reason that I agreed to their suggestion for an approach was based on my conversation several months ago at a well-attended Huff meeting in the courtyard where there were like 15 people or something. And I said, how important is it to you, the homeless people who are there, what kind of bathroom you get? And their response was, just get us a bathroom. You know, we don't care whether it's a porta potty or whether it has this or whatever it has that. So that made me feel like, in as much as I'm trying to help homeless people, that it made sense to go for the easiest proposal where I had to, where it was, you know, it's the easiest to get something done.
A suggestion to you in the future, and I realize we're still on tape, is you might want in the future, if you are actually thinking you're bringing a proposal from our group to them, if you're in the middle of negotiations with them, come back to us and say, does this meet your needs? Because I think you would have found, we would have said, well, it costs $15,000 and Ed Fry did it for $100 a month. So what the fuck are they doing would be, you know, our thought. And also, why not, doesn't it sort of segregate it? Doesn't it indicate, you know, it's not something, people are going to regard it as a sort of a lower class bathroom that is on the levee. It's, you know, there are bathrooms that exist already. In other words, those arguments could have been made to you. So.
I want to interject that Huff passed a resolution last spring, I think, that the bathrooms at the arena, the Kaiser Permanente Arena, be opened up on a 24-hour basis, and maybe if we need to get some extra security there. But they're already in existence, and they're also, it's a separate building from the arena, so, you know, the arena can be all locked up and the bathroom could be open. And so that was what this organization wanted to see as a first 24-hour bathroom. I know you're not going that way, but...
Are they run by the city? I mean, who pays for those bathrooms? Who cleans them? You know,
I don't know.
You need to research that.
I don't think that's that useful to me. We had the conversation up before.
So the answer is no. You don't want to research that.
Well, I'll consider it if we can deal with the conversation and the rest of the group feel strongly about it. But I'm going to make my point. These two are waiting to talk.
Well, David's had his hand up for quite a while. And before we go into too many suggestions that we creatively come up with these wonderful solutions for these problems, I think we have to be very, very, very realistic that a lot of these things are county problems, not city problems. Where does the county and the city work together? Because the county is going to get state money, not the city. The county is going to be able to have these programs. But if we can actually start having things that work, the city has to work with the county, right?
I think with regard to opening bathrooms, the city could just do it.
City can just do it?
Yeah. That's my opinion.
Yeah, thank you. That's all I know.
What you said, you implied that if it doesn't work, then the bathrooms wouldn't be open. Like, let's say they are badly trashed night after night for the first 2 weeks that they're open. Then they would be closed.
It would be a lot harder for me to either keep that or other bathrooms open. I mean, I'll still support it. I think it's really important. You know, it's like there's a real cost of not having bathrooms open, too.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the staff's, you know, the staff really don't like that. That makes them feel hopeless about doing it. So I think the common ground we have now is to open the bathroom and hopefully try to protect it from being trashed.
Unless it's unworkable to begin with. We don't have a 24-hour bathroom based on a permanent fixture, but somebody is monitoring it. I've been proposing you repeatedly.
I'm sorry to interrupt your interruption, but I just want to finish up on this.
No, I can't accept that.
You don't mind. We can go back to your interruption. I just want to get back to this one floor. In Palo Alto, a guy has a gas station and leaves the bathroom unlocked 24/7. No maintenance, no supervision, no, you know, I guess whoever cleans the employee's bathroom includes cleaning this occasionally. But my main point is sometimes it gets trashed and it's closed for a few nights or days. It's not open. I think that's all you need. In other words, of course you don't want this to turn into a bonfire that burns up the whole city of Santa Cruz or some, you know, real tragedy, of course. But it doesn't have to be all or nothing.
Right, good point.
Okay, that's thank you.
Yeah. And, you know, as far as it being dirtied, that is an advantage of the porta potty, and the city intends to have a really vibrant maintenance, you know, contract where it'll be cleaned very, very, very often. So if it just gets dirty, it's not that big deal. We're just talking about, like, someone starts kicking holes in the walls and turning it on side or, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff. That's my concern. It's not about it getting
dirty. And homeless people could also take the responsibility of keeping that place clean. That could become a homeless responsibility.
All right, along those lines, I'm working to make a poster, and I totally invite you guys to be on it with a whole bunch of pictures of people, and a lot of the people in the homeless center have agreed, like Manos and Stefan have agreed to be on it, and Brent is on it. So, and then also like me and my kids, and you know, it's not only homeless people, but we specifically want to get leaders in that community. And it'll just be a bunch of faces, and there'll be a text that says, "It's our bathroom, please don't mess it up."
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's worth a try, I think.
It just implies something about people that are using the bathroom. It sets the stage for failure, it seems like to me.
Why is that?
Because you're expecting people to do what, you know, drunks every night, not to do what drunks every night do downtown when they fuck over bathrooms. I mean,
well, these are the drunks we're trying to address. I mean, they're the most likely people to fuck over bathrooms.
Yeah, they don't get criminalized. They don't get driven away. And their bathrooms don't get closed down.
Of course they do.
Your implication.
It's the same bathroom. No, we don't have 20.
I'm talking about the drunks who pay money and go to bars and do the major trashing in our town.
Those people would
call
them
to the seaside company. So what I'm saying is that you're putting this in a special category. That's why I didn't like this idea of the isolated bathroom anyway.
Uh-huh.
And I told you that. And I couldn't really get much substantive response from you on it.
I felt like we had a good conversation a few months ago, and you made the same point you're making now. And what I heard the people there say was, whatever, Robert, we want to get whatever bathroom we could get. I mean, maybe other people can tell me what they thought.
Robert, how about this? How about, just listen a second. How about if Micah's statement stands, but instead of stating it in a negative way, like don't mess it up, how about take that same statement but state it in a positive way?
Sure.
This is your bathroom, this is our bathroom, let's both enjoy it nice and clean. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Instead of saying don't fuck it up,
uh-huh,
let's keep it nice.
Sure.
Put it in a positive way.
No. This is not being done in other bathrooms throughout the city. It's only the homeless bathroom that gets this kind of focus. I'm sorry. You're missing the
point. I get the point. I'm trying to find a compromise between the two of you. And I apologize for that.
Why a compromise?
I know it's wrong. This is the enemy. The man. We've got to stop the man. I'm trying to compromise. We'll beat you up on the way out. Don't worry. We'll break the bike every time.
So I'm going to allow... These folks have a somewhat different perception of the situation.
Wait a minute. How can you say that?
As you can see. So I'm going to let you talk to them. But mostly this is an email that I sent to you. They may have other questions. Maybe I can talk to you about it later when we're doing that one.
I agree with Robert's point about homeless, you know, that there's some special bathroom for homeless people. Like, homeless people pee and poop differently than housed people or tourists. It does have kind of a bad feeling about it in that way. However, I'd rather have a 24-hour bathroom open no matter how you label it than not have one. And I also point out that Robert was, with his lobbying at the Homeless Services Center back when Doug Loisel was the executive director, he got Doug to open that bathroom up on a 24-hour basis. So it was really Robert's advocacy that got the first 24-hour bathroom open.
You are the bathroom man.
He may be a pain in the ass, but he...
I totally honor that Robert does so much great work. I totally agree with you, Becky. Like, it's not my ideal bathroom, you know, but I'm one of seven people that theoretically have some control over the staff. So, you know, it's like, to me, as a politician, if I see a proposal that is helpful or it moves us along, then I want to support it because we, you know, it's going to be really hard to get any bathroom at all. And so this one had some momentum, so I supported it. But I agree with you that it's not ideal. I want to get the other bathrooms open, you know.
We like the San Lorenzo bathroom.
Yeah, me too.
I didn't see that you ever seriously. I'm sorry. Am I agreeing?
No, please, don't go. I want you to speak now. Please speak now.
And before you get to hear me again, this is Micah Posner, council member at a Huff meeting on the issue of a 24-hour bathroom. It should be pointed out, not a bathroom, a porta-potty, costing $15,000, that was supposed to open, I think it was supposed to open in the summer or late in the summer. Then suddenly we heard it was going to be opening in November, and now we're going into late December, and there's no word of that happening. So the real issue is, how do you treat this issue? I mean, I think a shit-in might be really kind of appropriate here if we ever had the wherewithal to do it. I mean, the idea that, you know, you're going to, you know, first you're going to establish a city where there are no bathrooms at night, and sometimes difficult to find a place during the day. And then you're going to start blaming homeless people for making a mess at their campsites because they are taking a crap there because they don't have any place else to go. It's a really kind of a double barrel blow of bigotry and complete contempt for public health, in my view, that's happening. And in order to really address this, I don't think you can compromise on the issue, at least in terms of clarifying what it is. When you compromise, you open the door for a kind of surrender in advance, which I think is what's happened, because I think the staff has decided they don't have to even consider a bathroom. Because Micah is not advocating very strongly for one. I mean, you know, he could be making public statements about it. He could be doing demonstrations about it. He could be, you know, if he spoke up strongly, others would also, I think, feel the obvious merit and common sense. But he doesn't. Instead, you know, he's the behind-the-scenes kind of character. He's the newbie on the block, although he's been there now a year. He's not as new as he might be. The whole focus to me is wrong. And while it's certainly true, any bathroom is better than no bathroom, when you set the situation up the way he's doing it, he is essentially allowing them to endlessly postpone this issue and then giving them a pretext to close it by saying, see, you know, we want to prove all you black people are really good people, but we can all, let's keep our, you know, segregated bathrooms clean and healthy. You know, and it is a segregated bathroom because people with money can go to the bars. People with money can go to the gas stations. And this is supposed to be a public bathroom, but it's actually a homeless bathroom. And the implication is they're too dirty, they're too violent to keep it open. And that is so much horseshit. Although, frankly, as the crackdown on homeless people proceeds, people get angry. And I wouldn't be surprised if they take out their aggressions, you know, wherever they can, wherever they do. It just happens that way. So it's a setup for failure, as far as I'm concerned, unless you are really being very upfront, saying, you know, we want the 24-hour bathrooms, the obvious ones, to be opened. You're not going to do that? All right, fine. Set up this one, but it's costly. It's not the best avenue. It isn't the best way to work it. If that's what you insist on doing, then do it. But it's not something that we really want in terms of what's the best thing to do. And to do that publicly and loudly, and not to worry about hurting the feelings of Tina Scholl or Scott Collins or, Martine Brunel. That can't be what you're doing. Because if you try to treat politicians as people in that way, you miss the fundamental issue of power. And power not only springs from money and numbers, it springs from truth. Unless you stick with the truth, you get lost in the lies and the half-lies and the compromises. That's generally my view. Let's hear a little more from the Big Three.
Mommy, come and see.
And that was Come Away, Melinda. Or Come Along, Melinda. No, Come Away, Melinda. From The Big Three, featuring Mama Cass. So, phone lines are open, 427-3772. Let's hear some more of the internal workings of the Huff meeting. You can see with the kind of spirited dialogue that goes on at these meetings, actually some of the same folks that call into the show often are at the meeting and are not afraid to make themselves heard.
I was not aware. I think that the police are going to use any examples of prostitution or needle use in this bathroom to shut it down. So that's why I think you're going to fail just at the very beginning. And I think you're going to fail because you haven't anticipated this is needed. You need to make a distinction that all citizens need 24-hour bathrooms, not just, that problematic group of homeless people on the levee. This is the problem. And in not pushing this issue, I think you are, simply making a token gesture for the Huff folks and a temporary gesture for homeless people for however long the police let this continue. I want to remind you that every other porta potty was shut down. I asked you for public records on this. I asked you to research it. You declined to do that. You declined to ask the staff about why those bathrooms were shut down, what the actual so-called crimes were. And the reason I asked you for that is because I anticipate this same problem will come up again, and they will do this again. And we'll be sitting here in 3 months without a bathroom, or with some kind of weird shit, security guards marching up and down. I don't know what we're going to have, but that's the reason I did it. And you really have answered my question, which is you haven't pursued it. You didn't have an interest in pursuing it. You thought it was sufficient.
May I call on David?
As soon as I finish.
Okay. Is that going to be today? No, please go ahead.
Probably if you want to make a few jokes, you can do that.
I'm a smart ass. Robert's got my number.
Okay, you're yielding the floor for David to finish, to say something?
He's already said it, hasn't he?
Oh, did you finish?
No.
Okay, what are you guys saying?
I think I remember now, being so on the spot like this, I don't know what to say. it just seems that, we're bickering over something. I think Robert has a very, 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 very good point to make. This special handling. Have you ever heard of a gay community that's liberated even in a community saying we want our own special gay bathroom because we behave differently in the bathroom? Hell no. Wouldn't have the nerve to think of doing that. But homeless are expected to come hat in hand, say just give us a little porta potty. It's disgusting. But it's a reality you have to work with, Robert. And I want to see how we can work with it. I want to see how we can do it. That's all I have to say.
I think we're all on the same page.
And I'd just like to say, to answer your request, Micah doesn't have to request those documents. You can...
I did. I didn't get them. He can do... Look, I get annoyed with you because you...
Well, let me finish this. Okay, I get annoyed with you. We all get annoyed with you. But you know what the United States is about? Everybody gets a chance to speak. And this is my chance, and I thank you for it.
You can talk whenever you fucking want.
No, I can't. I'm trying now, and I'm not getting to.
Because I want to finish what I'm saying on this one occasion right now.
This one occasion? This is so great.
Occasion.
Go ahead.
Well, maybe it'll be another occasion.
I'm sure
there
will.
But the issue is specifically what you were saying. You have any knowledge of what the situation is.
God
damn it.
We granted the point, and you keep making the point. You made it 5 times, and we granted it 5 times.
Well,
make it again. Make it again. No, make it again. All right, I'll make the point for you.
I'm not asking you to make the point.
I'm telling you I'm going to make the point. You don't have to ask. I'm going to make it. Here's the point.
So anyway, go ahead and talk to these.
Here's the point. Listen to the point. The point is that homeless people have to deal with differential labeling of their shithouses. That's the point.
No, that's not the point.
No.
You missed the point. The point has to do with why we were originally discussing the subject. Public records. And what Micah...
And here's the interruption. The interruption is any citizen can go to the appropriate public official and ask for documents under the Brown Act. If they're not granted...
I'm
not excusing you. I'm going to recognize...
The problem. Micah. Don't talk at me as though you want to have a conversation.
I don't.
Okay?
I'm Good. Trying to speak.
Good. Well, talk to him then. Don't talk to
me. Okay. And Micah, when Robert asks for those documents and doesn't get them, I'm sure there's an appeal process, isn't there?
Well, it does. It is a lot easier for me to get information than someone from the public.
But he can request them.
Yeah, he can. But
and I have.
They may or may not.
And isn't there an appeal process if he's denied?
I want to talk to the basic issue, because correct me if I'm wrong, Robert, but it seems like the point you're bringing up is that
what could happen and what may have happened before is that there was an argument made to close the bathroom that wasn't based on real data or real history.
I don't know, really. See, that's the problem. We don't know.
Right. I understand. Can you let me finish?
Yeah.
So I'm not sure that it would be difficult to get that information. It would take some time on my part and on the staff's part. And I don't know why it matters, because to me, the caution is important. What you're suggesting that could happen, I totally agree that could happen. So, but I don't know why we need to figure out whether it happened in the past or not. I think we just need to be vigilant and aware that could happen to this coming bathroom. I mean, why should we spend a whole bunch of time, you know, figuring out what happened in the past? And it's
for the same reason that the police department doesn't deliver the bikes. I think there was a phony deal that it was shut down because of political imperatives and not because of crimes.
Well, I'm not disagreeing with you, but why is that pertinent other than being on guard, being vigilant about it? I mean, I hear you, that could happen to the next bathroom, but other than that, why are we going to...
Where does it get you?
Yeah, what does it get us to figure that out if hypothetically it's true?
You know, I see an interest, and I see that I don't have any real support for this.
I see you're interested, and you're interested in the correct solutions, which is what we've been talking about. The whole meaning is that solutions is found.
And we're going to pause here because we do have a caller. I just want to state before you speak, caller, the reason that one wants to get public records about why the porta potties established in 1999 and eventually shut down in 2003 were shut down is because the whole issue of setting up porta potties at all rather than funding access to a permanent bathroom has come up, and if they're going to be shut down anyway, the issue is let's see it now and not wait to have to go through the same thing that they went through 4 years, 10 years ago. Hey there, caller. Welcome to Free Radio.
Hey, Uncle Robert. It's David Minton Silva, David Levitch, Schneebit Wavit, saying I think your show's doing real great. It's nice to see that, you know, we can kibitz and caboodle and bargain back and forth the way we're handling this revolution, but that we all do seem to be on a revolutionary course, and I'm very, very encouraged, the people that you're interviewing, the people I'm hearing. Yeah, we've got problems in solving things, and we're maybe solving something we've already solved once before, but we're going through it. And, you know, I wish everybody to hold on. You know, good change is going to come if you work. If we all work, good change will come.
So,
thank
David,
you,
David, you were actually,
yeah,
David, you were actually at this meeting. I remember. In fact, we can hear your voice on the tape.
Yeah, I heard my voice too.
What has been your experience trying to take a shit downtown, or has that happened in the last 3 months? Because we don't have the bathrooms that Micah promised us we would have in November, and it's now the end of December. What's your experience?
Well, they've. They've showed me the value of my diapers.
There you go.
I get to appreciate my diapers for longer periods of time while they're filthy and stopping, and give me a fucking break. Yeah, this is ridiculous. Sanitation is sanitation, and them trying to play politics with juggling, moving people around is ridiculous. We shouldn't take it, and I'm glad you're not, Robert. Thank you. Bless you for being there.
Thank you, David. Yeah, I mean... You know, what we need is to have someone who is revealing the internal discussions and blockades that the staff is doing to stop a public health safeguard. That this is similar to the attacks on needle exchange, although it's sort of in a different arena. The removal of sharps containers and the refusal to reestablish them in different places. It's all based, it looks to me like it's based on some sort of political apprehension that people who are anti-homeless or fans of the drug war are going to come down on their heads. Now, that could well be true. That may be the actual motivation, but we have to see it. And making it public, the broader community can be called upon to counter this with some more common sense. But if we don't see the records, if we don't hear what this internal discussion, if we don't see the memos, if instead you trust your city council member, oh, he's doing the best he can, oh, the staff thinks this and that, although we got a consensus from the staff. Well, did you? What was the nature of this? How many discussions actually occurred? What arguments were presented? What counterarguments were presented? What were the, you know, the cost figures? I mean, a real discussion, not just, I want to get on the good side of the staff. We're just going to do it this way. It's more important, I think, to get the true issues, true costs, true facts out. And that hasn't been done. Let's hear some more of Micah at the Huff meeting in October.
It's simply about, you know, I'm trying to get you to do things and, or not do things as you choose, which you either have or haven't done. I just want to get updates on those things. I really wasn't intending to go into a lot of things.
Yeah,
no,
I hear you. Yeah, so
some way of 111 points that, you've gotten through.
So that's question number, well, that was number three, actually. So my response to number three. So number three was about the five, what Robert called the five crow crappers a decade ago. So my response is I'm not interested in trying to figure out that history, even though I do share your concern that it could happen again, and I just want to be vigilant about it happening again.
And what was my response to that? I followed up on that with you.
No, you didn't follow up on that.
Okay, so go ahead with the next
guy. So that's number. So we did number one and number three.
But, you know, again, these people may have other concerns that are in this document. I can talk to you about this myself without, you know, having to fight with Chuck here about, you know, this and that. So why don't you guys ask what you want? You know, you can do it that
way. We're only trying to do the agenda that you wrote, and this is on the agenda. If you would like to take it off the agenda, that's fine.
It can't happen that way, Chuck. It's not working. So why don't you ask my questions you
wrote? Come on.
Yeah, no, that's my feeling about
this. This is what we're looking like.
Does anybody have anything to say about the cemetery?
Oh, I have one more thing on the bathrooms before we move on to the cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that we have discussed in the past as an organization that it might be a good idea if we mandated that certain businesses open bathrooms as a matter of law. That one we thought were gas stations throughout the city. That if they're open for business and selling gas, they should provide a bathroom to at least their customers. That would open up a lot of bathrooms, and I believe that the gas companies are the biggest tax, provide more tax money to the city of Santa Cruz than any other business. That was my impression from some research I did years ago. They want to operate in our city. They want to sell gasoline to our citizens, and as a requirement of operating, they could be mandated to open restrooms. We also thought any business that sells food, especially if they have so many seats in there, you know, would be mandated to have a bathroom for their customers. I don't see why we couldn't get some kind of ordinance to do that, to open up a lot of bathrooms, but not at public expense.
Well, it's the same reservation that there's a perception the bathrooms will get trashed, especially if they're open 24 hours. So
not 24 hours, just open when the business is open.
Okay. Okay. Currently, where the energy at from the city is to see if this works. If it works, in other words, it doesn't get destroyed, it'll be much easier to do anything like that. If it doesn't, we'll have to meet again and try to figure out what to do next. You know, the way that Up could really help, I think, you know, Robert had made a good suggestion about having 24-hour surveillance. And I did mention that a little bit, and I'll follow up about 24-hour surveillance.
That really wasn't a suggestion. I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, okay. If necessary, I would say that would be something. But I do not like it because it plays into the public safety mythology that we have. But, you know,
did that in San Diego, remember?
Yes, but San Diego is a million-person city, which needs, you know, may need that for other reasons. We don't have exactly the same problems as San Diego.
Okay.
So,
I have one quick question. Who gets to blame when the bathrooms get trashed?
The homeless, of course. Who else? Drug addicts, homeless, and the people who wanted the bathrooms in the first place. Micah will get blamed.
Yeah, I'll get blamed.
So it's going to get some prostitution.
Bullshit, this whole thing.
Well, should we not do it then? I mean, that's
well, I think you need to there needs to be a public proposal that, you know, that the obvious thing is to open up the bathrooms that already exist.
Well, hold on a minute. There's been a fairly public proposal. I've mentioned that several times at council meetings, and I've had private conversations. This is what's being offered. Do you not want this bathroom?
Who's offering it?
I have an idea.
City of Energy Office.
I have a brand new idea.
I'm asking you a direct question. I'd like you to say yes or no.
Asking me a question.
I'd like you to say yes or no. Do you feel like this is such a bad proposal that you don't want it?
That may not be a yes or no question, you know. I mean, I share the same sympathy as everyone in this group does about having a place to shit, you know, and to take a piss at night. I'm looking for that. I also, however, am concerned that at the same time this is being pressed, you get some really good reasons from the staff why the 24-hour bathroom is not a good idea. I mean, specific reasons, so that you can see what's going on with that. Because that seems to me to be much more likely to succeed, sustainable, cheaper, solution.
Well, I have the reasons. They make sense to me, even if I don't share them exactly. But you didn't answer my question.
I did.
That is what's being offered, is this porta-potty bathroom. Do you want it or not?
I'm happy to see more bathrooms wherever they are.
Okay.
My suggestion is this. If there's
something that he showed up.
So I could try to represent the city again about the 24 bathroom things. I tried to explain to you before, but I'll try one more time. Okay, so the city's perspective is they're worried the bathroom is going to get destroyed, not just dirty, but destroyed, and they'd rather test out a bathroom that they don't own and is not very expensive. They are interested, the city is interested in opening up more bathrooms 24-hour, but they want to do a pilot project with a cheaper bathroom.
Okay, pilot, test out, that's what I wanted to hear. That's exactly what my point is.
Well, he said that.
It's understood that that's what this is going to be. It's not going to be a place where we shovel off the homeless problem, but it's going to be a temporary fix, and there will be a positive attitude towards those bathrooms so that people can say, yes, it is
but
a good idea.
But that's not what it is, David. It is on the levee. It is over there.
It's also next to a major bank that I go to.
But if it's a
I wouldn't be happy if this is the only bathroom we ever get. It's just a beginning. And as an example of how serious the city is about it, the intent at the moment, which I think is still going forward, is to actually put plumbing under it, because we're building a little concrete platform. So I think we're putting plumbing under there with the hope that someday we'll get rid of the porta potty and put in a real bathroom. So the city is very serious about opening up a variety of 24-hour bathrooms, and the city is very worried about it, and this is where it ends up for now.
I have another question now. This bathroom that the city has provided is specifically to address the homeless issue and not having where to go with the bathroom?
I think so, yeah.
Well, can you put a sign in the portal that this is only for the homeless?
No, I can't.
Why are you suggesting that?
Because, you know, the homeless is the one that has been the target here.
You're going to be blamed.
Over and over and over, the homeless. Now, the city needs to understand that the population in general, you know, is going to be used in the bathroom. If they're not in general, they say this is only for the homeless, the people that sleep outside, the people that don't have a home or can go anywhere. That's why, you know, if it's going to be for the homeless, it needs to be right next to a homeless sleeping ground or whatever you want to call it. You know, that's why... You know, if somebody touches the bathroom and it's not a homeless person, who's going to get blamed? The homeless.
That's why it
needs to be, you know, stop attacking the homeless and solve the issue that the homeless have, plus everybody else that has, a way of, doing graffiti and, you know, getting their inside. That's why, you know, if you keep attacking the homeless over and over and over, you know, it will never end, and the bathroom is going to get crushed. So, you know, I think there's other ways of looking at this bathroom situation, and like I was saying.
And as you can hear, it's... The issue has definitely a lot of shit attached to it. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM. I'm Robert Norris. This is a conversation between Councilmember Posner and myself and a number of other Huff members or visitors who... all are trying to express their views, and I'm trying to manage this because I'm trying to get through a list of questions, which I was unable to do. Very frustrating for me, and in fact, maybe want to abandon the project for at least a while. And that's kind of been my position. I don't mind giving up the leadership of this group to other people who can perhaps carry on better, but I kind of have a certain style. Some consider it to be somewhat dictatorial, perhaps. I wanted to move this guy along. We don't always get Councilmember Posner to show up. I actually did play a tape a couple of weeks ago, which I actually got an interview in his office where I was able to ask, to some extent, some of these questions. It was on the, I think it was on the same day of the City Council's final vote on the public assembly law, or maybe its initial vote on the restricting the public assembly, or maybe it was on the, I think that was it. anyway, I think it's interesting to hear the kind of dynamic that goes on. People get heated, people get frenzied, but afterward, you know, they cool off. As you can hear, some of the people who are at each other's throats at this meeting, you know, we talk on the radio now. Chuck just called into the radio, and thank you, Chuck, for calling in. We still don't have a bathroom, you know. I mean, you know, it's there's no. If there were people to mobilize, I would encourage people to mobilize with some, you know, I don't know whether bags of feces are the best approach, or I don't know, dirty diapers, bringing them to the city council, or setting up a. I remember giving Catherine Byers, a former councilwoman, the Golden Potty Award for failing to establish public bathrooms. And they tried to have me arrested for doing that at city council. I mean, it wasn't a shit-covered porta-potty. It was actually a gold-painted commode. But I was banned from the council chambers for trying to do that, even though it's obviously First Amendment activity. It's obviously a matter of satire and public speech. It's obviously an unconstitutional restriction on somebody coming in, and it obviously attempts to derail the whole discussion, which is furthered by people laughing at the same time, sort of what we call kidding on the square about these issues, where it's a serious matter. As I'm sure everyone listening knows, when you need to take a crap and you've got no place to go, it can be very embarrassing, very humiliating, and particularly when you have to face bigotry and discrimination, as homeless people do all the time. There are two visitors' bathrooms in Santa Cruz. They are not 24-hour, but they are open during the day, and they aren't the kind of half visible to the public all the time kind of bathrooms that the homeless are now, and the community are now, saddled with in, for example, the Locust Street Garage, where you can actually look into the bathroom as you walk past. Similarly, the case at the Soquel Garage bathroom. But these two are inside restaurants, and they're clean, and they're warm, and they're staffed with sanitary measures and towels and so forth, paper towels. And one of them is in the bookshop Santa Cruz, or the bookshop Coonerty, as I call it, and the other is in the Cafe Gratitude. There was one in the Pizza of My Heart, but apparently they privatized their bathroom again. They were getting paid by the city, both of these organizations, Coonerty's bookshop and Cafe Gratitude, are paid by the city, and so you don't have to buy anything to use those bathrooms. For those who don't know, Cafe Gratitude is on Lincoln Street, about half a block from the New Leaf Market as you walk toward the Red Church. And, of course, the bookshop Santa Cruz, a famous landmark in Santa Cruz, is on Pacific Avenue on the 1500 block or something like that. So you're tuned to Free Radio, and I'm going to take another one of those big three breaks. So don't go away. Come on back. And, you know, here you can hear you can whistle a tune to along with Mama Cass.
About their monkey men, about their trifling husbands, and their no good friends. Well, peaceful women, they sit around all day and moan. They're wondering why. child. Girls, you better change your way of living. Angry and wild, I want to tell you something. You know,
women from the Big Three, or from Mama Cass with backup from the Big Three. You tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM, broadcasting, yes sir, broadcasting, yes ma'am. Here's a Christmas message from Edward Snowden, you may remember.
Hi, and Merry Christmas. I'm honored to have a chance to speak with you and your family this year. Recently, we learned that our governments, working in concert, have created a system of worldwide mass surveillance, watching everything we do. Great Britain's George Orwell warned us of the danger of this kind of information. The types of collection in the book, microphones and video cameras, TVs that watch us, are nothing compared to what we have available today. We have sensors in our pockets that track us everywhere we go. Think about what this means for the privacy of the average person. A child born today will grow up with no conception of privacy at all. They'll never know what it means to have a private moment to themselves, an unrecorded, unanalyzed thought. And that's a problem, because privacy matters. Privacy is what allows us to determine who we are and who we want to be. The conversation occurring today will determine the amount of trust we can place both in the technology that surrounds us and the government that regulates it. Together, we can find a better balance, end mass surveillance, and remind the government that if it really wants to know how we feel, asking is always cheaper than spying. For everyone out there listening, thank you and Merry Christmas.
And that was a Christmas message from Edward Snowden. It was short and sweet. Snowden recently, and you can read the article in the Sentinel, said that he felt he'd actually gained the victory that he had sought by having, he didn't insist that the surveillance stop, just that there be a debate on the surveillance. I, of course, would go far further and, you know, say, you know, get rid of the, not just get rid of the surveillance, but criminally prosecute every one of those people that have allowed it to continue for the last decade and a half, which I think is an important thing to do. However, his approach was simply to provide the documents so that the debate would begin and continue, and hopefully it will. Certainly has begun. Of course, there's been no real substantive acceptance of the responsibility, the accountability. But, you know, one shouldn't expect that from criminals who run the government. It's, you know, until you drag them into courts kicking and screaming, you're not going to get that kind of thing to happen. And there aren't any such courts that currently exist where people in positions of power can be tried in that way. International Court of Justice notwithstanding. So I'm just going to also bring to your attention an article I was reading, at least some of it. Has Pope Francis hoodwinked the left? This is an article from Counterpunch, which I ran into earlier today. I liked some of the things that were said. I thought I would read a little bit about it, since there's a lot of misidentification of charity with justice, I think, around holiday time, particularly Christmas time, which is largely a commercial dodge, as far as I'm concerned. It has little to do with, even with compassion and caring, much less equity and fairness. But let's hear what Jeffrey MacDonald has to say about that. I'm going to read a bit of this. After approximately 1,600 years of the Catholic Church, the Pope is suddenly a hot topic again. The high priest has infatuated the public and won a lot of praise in the secular media for bringing new popularity to an institution long plagued by scandals and out-of-date dogmas. Evidently, God's representative on earth still has an important role to play in the enlightened modern world, not so much as a legislator over condoms and abortions, but as a moral authority who issues warnings about the idolatry of money and the sins of the capitalist business world. This confuses a few pundits, but not the earthly powers. They know what a good thing it is to have those without power, believing in a Lord in heaven who gives them orders and leadership. What's up with the new pope's emphasis on the poor? In his first encyclical, he says there is too much greed. People are looking for easy gains and selfish. He wants the church to be a tribune of the poor and stresses concern for the marginalized. The message of his papacy is go to where the suffering is greatest. What the poor need above anything else is charity. That is something quite different, however, than finding out the cause of poverty and getting rid of it. Charity doesn't get rid of poverty, but keeps it going. It doesn't eliminate poverty because it doesn't change the way wealth is distributed, much less put the means of production in the hands of the poor. First, it offers the donor a good feeling about him or herself in a way that paying taxes doesn't. Second, it is whimsical and depends on the personal will to be charitable. The poor can't rely on it the way they can on a state program. The Pope's exhortation, "Go out and help the poor and suffering," tosses all different types of suffering together. Illness and death are the same as exclusion from wealth. These are all cases of one and the same thing, suffering. Charity for God's children does not mean those excluded from wealth or the means of production, but something more like a cancer patient on whom the Christian can demonstrate the virtues of love and compassion. It is practiced in abstraction from the causes of poverty. It deals only with the symptoms of suffering, which have one cause, sin. The earth is just a veil of tears. That's life. Saying that sinfulness is the reason for poverty is different than saying that the political economic system is hostile to the interests of the poor. Instead, greed or materialism is held responsible. What is wrong with greed as an explanation of poverty? Many people who are greedy, but they do not have power over the livelihood of others. That requires a whole political economic system. If greed is responsible for poverty, then poverty is something that can never be gotten rid of by an economy planned for meeting needs. It's unalterable. If the reason for charity is to fight against sin, it's also hard to practice without an object. Charity needs the poor because that's the Christian's passage into heaven. Christians are not for poverty in the sense that they want people to be poor. That's already taken care of by the capitalist economy and the state. When Christianity says things like the poor shall inherit the earth, it is saying the poor are holy. They need charity. This is different than saying poverty has to be eliminated. When Christianity says the meek shall inherit the earth, that means that God's people are those who make no demands. One must show humility, but not put forward one's needs. This is how the poor are celebrated by the church. Poverty is a sign of weakness. Why else would anyone be poor? A call for class struggle is far from compatible with the Christian virtues. If the poor need nothing so much as Christian charity, the flip side is that the Pope and the Church need nothing so much as the poor. That's how to restore the reputation of the Church. No more red Prada shoes and lavish ceremonies. Bring the Church back to the people and restore its credibility. In the competition for souls, the Church needs bodies, especially in Latin America, where evangelists have made strides. Go to the poor, because the vast majority of the world's population is poor and becoming poorer. When the Pope talks about poverty and wealth, he is not seeking an explanation. He is a man of faith. That means he doesn't want an explanation. Faith is different than a scientific finding. A faith can't be refuted. One can only refute a purported logical statement. That's why atheists always go down a wrong road in trying to refute Christians. But the need for faith in something like a God can be argued with. Where does this need come from? Why do people want a God? God's existence is not a proposal, but an expression of faith and the need for God. You can only understand if you believe, the Pope says. He works in mysterious ways. Christians and all believers want a God because they are driven by the search for meaning. It's their desire for a God to be there. They use the effects of belief for their reason. They tie it to a feeling. It makes me happy that the world is meaningful. People who feel a desire to believe in God always give the same reason. Peace of mind. It gives them a feeling of meaning as to what life is all about. It makes them feel good that God is there. Their big question is, why? The explanation, the nature of this, the explanation they are looking for is not really what's going on in the economy of politics, but an explanation of everything. There's one reason for everything in the natural world, in relations between people, for everything. That's what gives them peace of mind. Not material security, but rather being at peace or coming to terms with the world. Not getting rid of suffering, but being at peace with suffering. Christianity and its successor, Islam, offer icing on the cake. Eternal happiness, the attraction that if this world sucks, it can't be everything. There must be more to it. Believers want happiness in spite of everything. They want to be comfortable with this world. Their big question, what's it all about, God, is logically nonsensical. One reason for everything explains nothing. All it is a description of the world with the heading, this comes from God, Allah, nothingness, etc. It doesn't explain this or that, but everything. Saying that everything has a reason helps a person come to terms with something. It's not looking for a reason for this or that, but a good reason, i.e. one that allows you to accept something. The first big mistake, not just of religious people, but all kinds of spiritual types, is ultimately the need for faith. There's got to be some higher being out there. This is a poetic way of saying there must be a reason for everything that happens here that ties it all together and gives it meaning. It doesn't matter what kind of a being the believer postulates. They have one answer. There's a reason behind all reasons. When asking for a meaning of life, believers do not want to hear that the meaning of life is to make capitalists rich, to be a cheap cost factor that works hard and gets paid very little. They are not asking a real question or trying to understand the world, but something else. They have ideas about what they have to do in the morning, go to work, etc., but they are looking for a reason beyond all these reasons. They want to come to terms with everything, to know that everything has a reason, some reason. The meaning they are looking for is meaningless, but gives them a reason to accept everything. That's a fatal mistake. Their starting point is that they are dissatisfied. Faith looks for satisfaction, but it's not a satisfaction they have control over. It's different from saying, I am dissatisfied and need a revolution to get it so that I can then be the subject of my own life. Instead, it searches for good feeling in not taking control, but in knowing something else is in control. This ensures subservience. They don't say, I am serving some other interest that is keeping me poor and precarious. They say, I am serving God. This satisfaction with not being in control and okay with that ensures obedience. The search for meaning is not confined to religious people and their disowned fundamentalist cousins, but widespread. They are all joined by the same motivation. I am spiritual. I would like to believe. The Christian answer for what the hereafter looks like is unsatisfactory for many modern people who come up with different answers as soon as heaven seems unscientific. But even for those who don't believe in heaven, there is the need for something like it, so that the need for it can survive while they reject any specific notion as to what it might look like. The search for meaning is a case where the answers given are not as interesting as the search itself. Some people go from Buddhism to Christianity, back and forth, getting meaning from the search for meaning itself. They are satisfied with authenticity, with being true to their self. It's the journey, not the destination. But it's hard to find satisfaction in a search for satisfaction. It is perpetually dissatisfied, which is why it is constantly spurred onward. As Hegel put it, spirit is unrest. The search for meaning in whatever guise is in knowing that I am not in control, that what is in control is not the powerful who rule over me and make me their pawn, but something that makes me feel like part of something greater. God loves you so much he made you. One is not the subject of any old ruler, but something glorious. It confirms one is not in control, and that makes one feel at peace. It gives a good reason for what one has to do anyway. It doesn't free a person from having to work for the next day for somebody else's enrichment, but allows them a feeling of freedom in relation to the real authorities. And one is equal with the rulers because we are all subordinated to the same God, ultimately. Ultimately, my boss is not in charge, but God. This is a feeling of peace and freedom. One finds a new perspective on reality. One does not change the world, but interprets it. It's the same reality, but given a new outlook. Charity does not criticize the reason some have money and others don't, but says those with money should help those without it. That's why it's wrong-headed to contrast the Pope's message of concern for the poor with his support for the former junta in Argentina, as if he had two sides. The only rule a Pope rails against is one that doesn't give free rein to the papacy, like the former Eastern Bloc states or China today. The Pope's message to the poor is precisely, because your everyday reality is unsatisfactory and disappointing, you should look for the meaning of life by serving a higher being. Then your poverty is even a good condition for true faith. That's a blessing for any ruler. And that's Jeffrey MacDonald, who writes a column called Ruthless Criticism. And he writes it in, well, it's picked up by the Counterpunch website. Well, let's take a musical break, and I'll be right back. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. My name is Robert Norris. If you want to catch me on air, you can call in now up to 8 o'clock, 427-3772, or off air at 423-4833. I will offer you spiritual guidance if you need it.
Well, I got a woman, and she's long and tall, and she moves her body like a cannonball. Well, it's goodbye, honey, fare thee well.
If I had wings like Noah's dove, I'd fly away to the man I love. Well, it's goodbye, honey, fare thee well.
Now there's only one thing.
Oh.
And that was another one from the Big Three. Nora's Dove, it's called. Well, let's hear some voices other than Huff members fighting with each other, or council members trying to rationalize what's cooking. I think we can do that. Let's see if we can. Here's some interviews from one of my favorite interview spots, the Calvary Episcopal Church, the Red Church, at the Monday Meal, which is every Monday, as you might imagine, from 5 to 7. The meal actually starts at 6, but you can get coffee at 5. You can wander over to the Penn University in the next room and hear Paul Lee and other luminaries chattering about or talking about serious, if sometimes abstract, subjects, often subjects of political import, occasionally having to do with the homeless. I think Paul gave a lengthy discussion of his book. I'm not sure if he was talking about a new book, probably was, or his earlier book, which is called The Quality of Mercy. It came out in the early 90s and took strong exception to activists like myself. But there are always divisions among people in this struggle, and that's how it goes. let's hear some interviews from people who are poor and out there.
I'm here at the Red Church. It's December 23rd, 2013, about 6. I'm talking with... What's your name, sir?
My name is Jose Jimenez.
No, it isn't. What's your name?
Okay, it's Bob Hutchison. They call me Hutch.
Uncle Robert?
Yes. Not as Robert Norris. He's my brother.
Mr. Robert.
Anyhow, I'm having a good time. The police backed off. I got him flowers and apologized for being such an idiot. I quit drinking alcohol and I switched to medical marijuana.
Does that help?
That helped a lot.
You look more clear-headed.
Well, I am. And, you know, alcohol's poison to me.
Well, I know that you also said you've been having good times in the hotel.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
What hotel is it?
It used to be the Inn Cal. It's now the Santa Cruz Motel. Hotel.
Although I hear that's a high crime area.
Well, yeah, but they put in more lights and the cops cruise through their stakeout there and they watch it real close. I haven't been bothered.
Is the hotel usually full?
I'm chief security there.
Is it usually full in the winter, the motel? Or?
No, it's empty. Right? There's two other guys that live there regularly besides me, and that's it, three of us.
It's a pretty big motel, right?
It's busier in summer, but right now it's Christmas time, and people are kind of getting home with families and stuff like that. They're not traveling too much. They've got that done. They're settling down for the big day.
Well, how long have you been in the motel now?
6 months now, and I have an agreement with my representative, Faye. If I live there for 1 year, that proves my stability, I can have total control of my $100,000.
Then you, of course, will give half of it to me, right?
A third.
Well, we can dicker.
I'll give you half.
What about three quarters?
I'll give it all to you.
Now, you're not as stable as you should be.
Don't give me money. They won't give me the money, and I won't be able to give it to you.
I'll have to think about that.
The poor people would do it. Me, I just piss it away. Do you have a couple bucks I could borrow?
Well, we've been talking with that man about the previously the Incal.
Also, they give me $5 a day cash.
It doesn't go far these days.
I think it goes as far as I can.
And again, we've been speaking.
Usually, what I do with five.
Speaking with Robert Hutchison, if I'm not mistaken.
What I do with that $5 a day now is instead of going out and buying alcohol, I go out and buy medical marijuana. The guy gives me. They give me.
Sorry, it's illegal to buy marijuana in this area.
No, I got a card. Good. Get out of here.
I guess you're right. No, I am Josh.
What would you like for Christmas?
I don't know. I'll get back to you on that next year.
All right. What about that couple dollars?
Take care, Hutch. We have a positive report from?
Raven, Santa Cruz, 20 years.
So you've been not harassed by the police in your van recently?
No, we haven't been harassed at all. So maybe it's because of New Year's, I don't know, or Christmas or whatever. But
keeping a low profile?
Yes, sir. Low profile. Low profile, they'll leave you alone. You go out there getting loud.
How about that?
If you go out there getting loud, then you're going to get harassed. So with that, I'll say good night, and everybody in Santa Cruz, peace out.
Thank you, Raven.
And I don't think that's necessarily true. I've said that before in the past. People like to believe that if only they follow all the rules, they will be safe and be treated properly and compassionately. And it's just simply not true in Santa Cruz. There are no protections or safeguards or basic human rights protections for poor people. And there won't be until they get together and demand them. It's really as simple as that.
And a positive report from River Wolf. And you say that you are in your van and not being molested by the boys in blue?
No, not at all. Just kind of scooting around, trying to go to different places that aren't right by neighborhoods, because neighborhoods are really a problem. People.
How long do you stay in one place, generally?
Not more than 2 nights, usually.
And how long have you been in town?
Just back a month now. Yeah.
And are you alone in your vehicle, or do you have somebody with you?
No, I'm alone.
And how about your general security of your property? Have you been feeling pretty comfortable with that, or how's that feel?
Really, pretty good, yeah. No, I keep it locked when I'm away.
Yeah.
Don't spend a lot of time there, and people don't see me coming and going, so it's been pretty casual. You know, just trying to keep a low profile, not attract attention to the security guards and people traveling around. So it kind of just looks just like a nondescript camper van. You know?
Now, what about neighbors? Is there any problem with them? Do they have getting any flack from anybody?
No, I haven't actually. Because I've been moving around and really staying away from the housing areas and
industrial zones.
Pardon?
In industrial zones, then?
Yeah, more so industrial or even parking meter spaces after 8 o'clock at night when they're not collecting fees.
Spend any time on Pacific Avenue?
Just a little bit. Yeah, I busk with my guitar a little bit.
How does that go?
It's pretty tough in the winter time. Not making a lot of cash, but right now it just feels good being out there for the spirit of the holidays. So.
How are the police and hosts treating you down there?
Really good.
Excellent.
I've never been hassled or harassed, but I just try to be respectful and not be playing too loud and not be getting too rowdy.
Don't sing out of tune.
Try not to.
All right, then. We've been talking with you.
Good talking with you.
Good talking with you. And again, you are?
River Wolf.
Of course. Thank you.
Thank you.
Say that again, please.
People need to sleep. They need to lift the sleeping bag. They wonder why so many people are wandering around talking to themselves and everything and have a bad attitude. Well, they would have a better attitude if they let people get some sleep.
And your name is?
Carl Arnell.
Thanks, Carl.
So I talked to Joe online, just told me he walked by the Metro Transit Center. About what time was it? About 3 in the afternoon. Apparently there was a bus hit someone. Might have been a homeless person with bags out.
Christmas.
But
you have a great cap.
13.
Yeah,
I got to advise listeners, I'm not trying to censor anything. That's just me burbling along with my tape recorder. There was this, of course, this was the day that the older 70-some-year-old man was hit near the Metro, and I don't think his name has been released. I didn't really get any on-the-spot reports, but people were aware of it. Haven't heard any confirmation from the woman who reported she had spoken to a friend who saw a woman die of hypothermia downtown near Pacific Avenue behind Benicio's liquor store. So I don't know. There's no indication that that's the case. I've seen nothing in the media about it, which doesn't mean it isn't true. But I haven't heard any more direct reports, so I'm treating that as just a rumor at the moment.
My personality.
Very jaunty, you know.
My Dago hat, because I'm a Dago.
So, anything specific, or just about, you know, the un-Christmassy nature of this Christmas?
It's just the same old thing I've been saying, you know, just no Christmas decorations, nothing. They're just...
Right, we talked about that.
It's Christmassy out there, you know. People shopping doesn't look like any more different than regular Saturday shopping or something down there, you know. It doesn't seem Christmas.
And we have been getting this report from
George McDougallenheimer.
Thank you, George.
We have a man is on the lookout for.
Well, where's the Christmas spirit? What happened to the more charitable side, the more altruistic side, to care for those and care about those who are less fortunate? Did we get left out because we're not the kind of people who shop till we drop?
And is it different than last Christmas in your experience?
Well, that's the thing. Christmases in Santa Cruz, for as long as I've lived here, just don't have the Christmas spirit. Thanksgiving was wonderful. Christmas, I guess it's all about retail and money.
Usually. We've been talking with...
My name's Don Green.
Thank you, man.
Room at all of it.
Hotel Royale. After Stag burned away, I was homeless till now.
And now you're okay?
Yes.
Or at least you're indoors?
Yes, of course.
And we're talking...
My New Year's present already, early.
Well, that's good. And what's your name?
Navid.
Navid. Feliz Navidad, Navid.
Thank you.
You're welcome. One tape. We're talking with...
Leah.
Go ahead, Leah.
I was at the homeless garden today, Ornacho Bridges Farm, and it was beautiful. And I saw all kinds of birds and hummingbirds, and it's peaceful and sunny and warm out there. And you can go pick some food.
Homeless people could, too.
Anybody can.
That's great. It used to be that it was most of it went to middle-class folks for money.
Yeah, but if you can't pay, you can go pick some food.
Sounds good. Thank you.
I ate arugula.
You did, eh? And we've been talking with?
Leah.
Thank you, Leah. So, talking with?
Richard.
Go ahead, Richard.
I'm manic depressant, and I've been in a really depressed mood. And between two street guys, James and Rainwolf, and Nancy and Leah and Marion, and a really asshole Santa Cruz cop who was hassling these street people that he shouldn't have. And I stepped in and told him, hey, he's threatening this guy's dog. And I told him, look, it's a service dog. It's a federal law. And he's got a problem. Look at him. Can't you tell?
Who's the cop?
He's a Santa Cruz cop.
Who was it?
A little short guy with short hair, and he's got a scar on his
head. Was this?
Night before last.
And where was it?
On the mall.
At what time?
A little after dark, maybe 7:30.
Where exactly on the mall was it?
Right in front of the theater.
Now, Cinema 9 or Del Mar?
No, Del Mar.
Right.
Yeah.
What was the outcome? Were you successful in getting the cop off the dog's back?
Yeah, they left. I escorted them. They told me he couldn't be in the mall. He couldn't have a dog in the mall.
After dark, yeah.
After dark. But a service dog, you can.
Yes.
And the only thing you have to have a service dog, you have to say the dog is a service animal, and then they can ask what service does it provide, and you tell them.
You don't even have to say that.
Well, no, you do. You do. I've researched. I had a dog for 10 years that was a service dog.
In Santa Cruz, or?
In Santa Cruz, yeah. And I kept a letter from my doctor with a picture of the dog, but you don't have to. You say it's a service dog. They can then ask you what services it provide, and you answer back, PTSD.
Right.
And that's all. That's the end of it. They can't do anymore.
They made you take the dog off the mall?
They made Rainwolf take the dog.
Thank you, man. Anything, Sean?
Sure.
And that's, an example, if this man's story is accurate, of illegal behavior by the Santa Cruz police, discriminatory behavior as well. And also probably selective enforcement, because dogs by well-dressed people on the mall after dark are not, as far as I know, told to leave. Of course, I'm not around when these things happen. And if anybody has seen that happen recently, let me know. Give me a call off air, 423-4833, and I'll put forward that the police are uniformly enforcing the law. But if it's a service dog, and it's been my understanding that if it's really a service animal, you do not have to present papers. You do not have to, as this man seems to agree, but even you don't even have to say what it's used for, although he seems to think you do. But in any case, that should be sufficient. And instead, apparently, for this unnamed officer, it was not, if this person's report is accurate. See anything happening downtown, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833, or post it on Santa Cruz Indie Media, indiebay.org, or photograph it and put it up on YouTube, and just describe what you've seen. If you only have a partial information, if you're wrong about your interpretation, well, perhaps you'll be challenged. But the really sad thing is to have these kinds of injustices happen day after day and night after night, and nobody says anything. It's the conspiracy of silence, and it leads to greater evil. Of course, as the old quote goes, for evil to triumph, all that is needed is for good people to do nothing. And that's the way it is in Santa Cruz, too.
Yeah, I met a man the other day. He was from the Middle Eastern areas. He said his name was Saint Nick, and he was tall and dark skinned, and he had this very grayish
definitely a red man.
Yeah, but I think he was a Muslim, and he said something about giving all these Christians reindeer turds for Christmas because he never met a more self-serving group of people in his life.
Thank you. Your name is?
John DeLuge.
Thank you, John. Any reports? We have a report from a man who was tossed from the bank.
Now I'm living back behind the post office in that dumpster area again.
And what happened?
The man says he's going to open that bank area up in 2 weeks. So.
75 River Street or?
3030.
Not sure what that is.
Right there in North Pacific, the old Bank of the West.